WNST, Tulsa Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Wow, it's been a day. It's been a country. It's been 50 states since I got together with this guy. It's been a long summer around here. He has been absent in most conversations that have not been, well, at least political week. We had a lot of conversation with the political people that we put on the air at AM 1570. Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive, most importantly, former guidance counselor to Nestor Aparicio in 1982 at Dundalk High School, joins us after, I don't even know what the... 6 weeks is a long time. 7 weeks, I mean, that's a long, long time in today's news cycle, Don, to know how much insurrection, treason, espionage, crab cakes, breweries, football. How are you? How was your trip, brother? Those pictures were unbelievable.
Unreal, right? Returned from 12 days in Alaska. I said to you off the air, Nestor, I don't know what I expected in Alaska, but it exceeded whatever that was. I would say to anyone out there who's contemplating a trip, put Alaska on your list. We did. People say, did you do a cruise or did you do land? And we did the land tour, which was absolutely terrific. Saw pretty much the entire country from north to south. And it was spectacular. Even when I would predict that one of your favorite stops would be a little turn off to a little place called Tarkeetna, which was the inspiration for the TV show Northern Exposure. And it is literally a town that's a couple of blocks long, and that's it. And,
yeah, I mean, I've seen those kind of towns in the West, right? Like, I mean, I've traveled extensively through this country, right? I mean, in all sorts of places, driving back roads in the South and in the Midwest, and certainly out Yellowstone area, and driving through Idaho and driving through Wyoming. I've done all that. So I've seen that. But Alaska, to me, the wilderness part of it, I would think it might look a little like Colorado because of the mountainous part of it, or a little bit like maybe the fjords look to me in southern New Zealand, but Alaska is its own animal, man. And it's not on my bucket list, but it's becoming more like that. And I know I could chase the Northern Lights there too. So right. You have a Northern Lights where I'm going to do that.
We didn't get to do that. It is remarkable. I think you're right. So Colorado is probably a good example. I guess Oregon would be as well. There are a couple of things that stand out. Everyone, you know, I was with my brother, sister-in-law, and Linda, and we all commented that I don't think we were prepared for its lushness, its greens.
Well, the time of the year too, right?
Nestor, in 6 weeks, everything will pretty much, even with global warming, for the most part, in most parts of Alaska, be covered with snow. I guess one of the things that was a bit of an adjustment, and you're not a great sleeper anyway, but to be in a state where the sun sets at 10:55, which means that at midnight, it's still bright.
I mean, so you've never been anywhere in your life like that?
I've never been anywhere.
Okay. So like a lot of places in Northern Europe, like if you're in Amsterdam, I've been to Sweden and Norway and those areas there, you will get, I mean, when I was in Amsterdam in June, Don, I was walking around 11:15 at night, and it was light out.
In Alaska at 11:15, it would definitely, at this time of the year, it was still light out. Now, the flip
side.
It
doesn't weird me out, though. It lengthens. When I'm on a trip, I'm always burning when I'm on a trip, right? When I'm on a trip, I got 4 or 5 days in a place. I rage. I don't sleep. So the more sunlight for me, the better. The hardest trip I took was to Norway and Sweden in the winter one time. Okay. And the sun comes up at 9:30 in the morning, and then it sets around 2:30.
Well, they
and
were
by
just,
4 it's dark again. That's a little weirder for sure.
We were in Seward and really enjoyed an older couple who had a B&B, one of my favorite stops. The guy had built, when I say he had built, I mean, literally board by board, he built this cottage on their property, and it was just remarkable. And he talked about starting in early October, you go from this to what you just described, about 9:30 or 10 in the morning until about 2, and that's it. And that would, you know, for Linda, who needs sunshine, that would put her in a fetal position, so to speak. But he said, you know, it's interesting. You get ready for it. You get your whole library stacked up. You sort of get a different rhythm, but it's a wonderful place. We lucked out on the weather, evidently, in terms of Mount Denali. And for those not paying attention, and I don't know that I knew this before I got, I mean, I was familiar as a little kid in social studies and geography class with Mount McKinley. Well, Mount McKinley has been renamed Mount Denali in honor of its heritage. Evidently, you see it 3 out of 10 days if you're lucky. We saw it beautifully the first 3 days. So we had, as you all, what do you say?
You got Rainier too. You were in Seattle, yeah, right?
We had this incredible, again, same thing with Rainier. Evidently, you see it a few times a month. I mean, it was as clear as if I were in Patapsco State Park. So while I'm out there, you're doing the legendary crab cake tour again. And Nestor, it's such a great follow. I would say to folks, if you're not following Nestor and the and Jen and the daily activities of the Crab Cake Tour, what a great travelogue for our state. I mean, and you know what I was struck by? You were blown away, and you weren't that familiar with it, with Rocky Gap and Western. That was all new to you.
Well, I think I told you this, and I went through it last year, and the places we're going back to that we're honestly like re-exploring. We loved downtown Frederick and didn't stay long enough last year.
Isn't that a great spot?
Well, when we got there, it was the end of the tour, right? So it's like we were day 28, retired. It was the night that J.K. Dobbins blew his knee out, right? On the first play of the game, we were literally watching that game at the bar at the tasting room. And we didn't explore enough, and it was really busy that night. We went back and did like a night and a day in Frederick. We wound up at Monocacy Brewing, which wasn't even on the plan. We made a turn. We're like, oh, that's a brewing. Oh, that's Monocacy Brewing. Jen's like, it looks like they're having a party. We went. It was their 10th anniversary. So the serendipity part of this, of stumbling into places at the right place at the right time and passing the right pie shop and getting a razzleberry pie and bringing it home with some Wise vanilla ice cream on it. Just little things we did. I mean, we went to Latrobe and saw the Steelers practice. The weather held up. It was dodgy. That was the most beautiful drive. We went into West Virginia on a recommendation from a crazy lady we met on the street in Oakland, Maryland, antiquing. She was trying to sell Dennis Colazzo's a car because she had the Bronco Sport my wife wants. And she was like giving my wife an interior. This is on the streets of Oakland. We're just out in Western Maryland. She said, my daughter lives in this arch town. It's about 20 minutes after you should go. We're like, okay, we went. I'm eating a peach salad with the best cheeseburger I've had outside of my wife's cheeseburgers. And I want to meet the woman in the kitchen. So I want to give you the name of the town because I want to look it up again because I don't want to get the name wrong because it was a sleepy little town and I want to promote it because it was really cool. It is a Thomas, West Virginia. So write that down. Thomas, West Virginia. It's a little town on a creek. It's right below the highest point in the state, which is, Don, if you can picture West Virginia, here, I'll pull it up for you because I have it on the map. For anybody watching, this is why you want to watch us on TV sometimes is doing this. So this little town here, the corner of the state, there's a little rock. It's called Maryland's highest point. You pass it on the West Virginia road, on the road to this little town called Thomas. Thomas, West Virginia has a little creek that runs through it. It's an arts community. It has this farm up table restaurant that we went into. And I go in, get a burger, get a salad, get a little pop shop. I demand to meet the woman that made this delicious dressing on this peach salad. It's like a poppy seed. It was delicious. Very homemade, everything in there farm to table, as you would expect in the middle of West Virginia. She comes out and she said, I heard your accents out there. You're from Baltimore. I'm from Middlesex, from Essex. You ever heard of that? And I'm like,
Lady,
oh, you gotta be kidding me,
lady,
right?
You're singing my song.
I mean, is there anything more Baltimore positive than that, Moeller? Think about it, right? So here I am in this little town in West Virginia. She said, oh, you know, I grew up in Essex. You ever heard of that? I said, come on, man. I said, my high game bowling was at the Middlesex Bowling Alley, you know? I'm right across from Al Seafood and Peach John's. And by the way, we're going to Schultz's Crab House that I haven't been to in 40 years in Essex to have a crab cake on Sunday with my son and my daughter-in-law. So we're doing that. We're doing breweries. Don, the tour's been cool, man. I just gave you a fun story off the top of my head. But every day
you have
a story like that, right?
Talk about, before we get to the serious news of the day, and we're not going to get out of here today, even though we try to limit this to 25 or 30 minutes, we will at least touch on the Orioles and the
I
Ravens.
I did 47 minutes with Max Weiss behind your back.
I saw it, man. I saw it.
Did you see me ride her about not winning Best of Baltimore? Was there anything better than that?
Well, you know, I love me some Max the girl. And again, I always say if people aren't getting Baltimore Magazine, they're missing out. But you had – this is the great thing about the Crab Cake Tour. You stumbled on a crab cake that got you as excited about crab meat as I've seen you. And that was a little crab cake in Randallstown. And again, I think a little bit of serendipity, right?
Well, no, it's not. It was a bigger crab cake. It wasn't little and it wasn't inexpensive. You know, you go over to the neighborhood there. There's a lot of places with deals or lunch buffets. It would be, this is not, you know, it was a $33 platter with quality, high end, special take home, special curbside. I mean, there's a lot of places specializing in. And I went to one of them in Potomac on Friday night. The market at River Falls is a place after your heart, right? Your 818, right? Where it's a deli, charcuterie, cheesemonger. It's all of that. It was seafood market, fresh fish, fresh steaks, fresh cut wine, things that go with wine, salads, all kinds of salads, kebabs, all of that in a market. That's where I went the other night. And so all of this is popular, right? Especially on the backside of the plague, that you don't need seating. You don't need to have a cafe and Billy Joel and tablecloth. Like, you can do great food because you're a caterer and people will carry out 100%. You are a carry out of good, of beyond a sub or a pizza, as we would know it, right? And so that's pretty much what this place is. It's called the Crab Queen. It's in Randallstown. I went into Heritage Smokehouse Barbecue on York Road on our way into Full Tilt to watch the Ravens game on Thursday night and the Orioles game, I should say. The Orioles game was more important than the Ravens game, Mola.
Right.
How about that on an August Thursday night?
We'll talk about that because it takes some getting used to again, right?
I go into Heritage Smokehouse and a family of four sitting there and they yell at me, Scott, hey, you're on a crab cake tour. What are you doing on a barbecue joint? I'm like, hey man, I already had my crab cake today. I was at LP Steamers all day. I'm having some barbecue with my wife. He buys me a beer, a Union Zadies, and I spent the day on Wednesday with Adam Benish, the founder of Union Brewery, gave me a full tour, showed me the Ed Reed cans and the Eddie Murray cans and Steady Eddie, and I'm drinking beer and Judas Priest is playing Breaking the Law, and I felt like, oh my God, Union Brewing, how can I not be here? So the next night we got a Union Brewing beer in Heritage, and a guy comes up, starts talking to me about the crab cake tour, and he says, hey man, I'm from Randallstown. What's this thing you yesterday? What, you know, I said, Offutt Road, Liberty Road. He said, what? Offutt? There's a little plaza there. What are you talking about? I said, it's in the back. It's on the side. Google it. Because it really is on the side, right? And you walk in. It's just a tiny little place. Friendly people. There's a couple people work there. Big video board with food. Soul food. Great food, right? So I got the green beans, turned down sweet potatoes, which I usually don't do.
You're going to tell me you didn't get the collard greens? I'm assuming.
Listen, I get two sides, man. Relax. I'll go back. It was good.
Come on,
all right.
I love
I'll
the
go
collard.
Back with you.
All right.
So I got green beans with turkey, and I got the mac and cheese, and I got a crab cake. Listen, she was trying to sell me a double. I'm like, hold on. I'm doing 31 crab cakes and 30. Last year, I accepted doubles and bought doubles. Right. And we went to the Knicks Airport Inn up in Hagerstown the other day. And my wife's like, well, get the double. I'm like, why don't we get a full steak and cake? Why don't I'd like a little, just to do something different.
Just a little.
Just a, so I brought the crab cake home intact and I started eating it. I took one bite of it. And I'm like, well, that's, I took another bite and I'm like, well, that's really good. And then I started working and it sat there and I took another bite and it was cold. No offense to Nancy down at Fadley's, but I didn't, it tasted a little better warm for me. The slurry in it was a little more activated warm, I thought, creamier, you know? So I said, okay, I'm going to take it downstairs and show it to Jen. And by then I'd shot three videos of me eating it saying, damn, this is good. So then I brought it down and then we heated it up properly in a toaster, like it's nice, come back to life. And I took one more bite and I'm like, and I said, Jen, you know, she took a bite and she's like, oh yeah. And then she got under the crispy part of it. And then she started eating my damn crab cake. And you know, I mean, now I have to share it with her. So it was just a really delicious crab cake. So I don't, some of them hit me right. And I, and the ones that don't hit me right, I don't want to be mean, Don.
No, you don't do that. And that's what I
mean, I just don't want to be mean. I've had a couple of okay crab cakes. I mean, you know what my wife would do? She takes a bite and she'll say, not my favorite.
Right.
That's her way of saying, it's okay, I'll eat it. It's good. It's a crab cake, but it's not my favorite. That's just her way of saying that.
Those of us who have been around, like you and Jen, Linda, all of us, I am real, again, would never, it drives me insane when people on message boards and social dump on small businesses. And I always think to myself, guys, these are men and women who are our neighbors. They have a dream. They are risking everything.
It's an attack on the foundation of their existence.
And that leads us, I guess, to all of the news, because it's that ugliness, that need to destroy, that need to feel vengeful. And my goodness, I don't know what else we can talk about when we talk about the last few days, week or so in American history, where a president of the United States, who by his own admission never read anything, so he certainly never read any of these documents while he was in the White House, despite what people may try to get us to believe. Remember,
it's sort of like stealing artwork and not even having any appreciation for the art.
I mean,
it really is an incredibly, it's so on brand, you know, it's so on brand for any of us.
Well,
witness the carnage of this
on brand
human
on brand in this way for me, Nestor. And I thought, before I posted this, I thought, I don't have any facts. But then I thought sort of what you just alluded to, and that is, I thought, you know what? I have a history of behavior that I think I'm comfortable posting the following. And it was something to the effect of, that there is no doubt in my mind that the game plan here was to figure out how to monetize this information. There is no other reason that Donald Trump would take, I guess if they took out 15 boxes before and 11 this time, we're up to 26. So nearly 30 boxes of classified information.
Well, just think of any place you've ever worked. And listen, boxes and paperwork, right? It feels very modern, right? I mean, you know, like the modern part of this would be digital information and server information and, you know, things that are encrypted. And, that, you know, that would be how I would think of espionage, right? But think of any place you've ever worked if you pulled 25 boxes worth of whatever the aorta of my business, your business, the schools you manage, the government agencies. I mean, you're at a different level because you worked in the government. So you have a different sensitivity to stuff that might have put you in jail and made Linda a widow, right? Like, there's a lot of things you could do wrong when you work in government, touching things and clearances and things that you're aware of that I'm not even aware of, things that you could do wrong, they could put you in trouble, right? I mean, the government clearances to touch any of this top secret stuff, from what I understand, maybe even you and I wouldn't even clear it if they literally sat and asked us questions about our families and all of these things.
I don't think we would, Nestor. And there's there's nothing I can equate it to in terms of county government. I left every exec I ever knew and worked for, including myself. We didn't take anything out with us, but that's not to equate it to this. We didn't, we may have had.
It's one thing to be Spiro Agnew. It's a different thing to be pulling boxes out and saying, I'm going to take this information and sell it to a developer later on. Like, it's insane. Like, anyone who's a mayor of anything, anyone that's an executive would know, like, you're going to go to jail if you do that. You know, I mean, literally.
And then I think, and we're all trying to unpack it, right? We're all trying to unpack it. I think the real story here that we still have not seen play out is this remarkable, remarkable phenomenon by mainstream Republicans, with very few exceptions. You know, I had some dear relatives and friends react the other night when I suggested online that this is who the Republican Party has become, that they're this anti-law enforcement, anti-rule of law, fealty to one man, fascist authoritarian leader. And they reacted taking offense to that. And my only answer to them is, if you're paying attention, pretty much without fail, every recognized Republican leader's response to a man taking boxes of nuclear information to Florida was to...
And palling around with the Saudis, too.
And palling around with the Saudis, the Live Tour, all that stuff.
The defense of Putin, right?
Attack the FBI and the Department of Justice. I mean,
the release of the FBI's names of the people who are involved in prosecuting him, releasing the names of their families... But what? Well, I just forget sometimes how freaking sleazy he was in the Nestor, 4 years, and how angry I was every day for 48 months in regard to the carnage that this, and now this is where it leads. It's not shocking. I mean, it's just.
It should be terrifying, and it should be shocking. I mean, Nestor, think about it. Right-wing message board after right-wing message board, encouraged by Fox News and the Kevin McCarthy's, and of course, the really insane people, the Gateses, the Boberts, the Greens, encouraging, published the judge's address, who signed off on this, said, we need to find out if he has children, being the inferences will take and harm his children. I mean, listen, Nestor, to what just came out this morning as we were getting
ready. Well, the attack on Salman Rushdie.
Well, Salman Rushdie, but listen to what this Ricky Schiffer Jr. posted after the Republican leadership reacted as they did. Be ready to open fire tomorrow. Take your weapon to work. Have it in the trunk. Well, I'll be dead, everyone. Remember, McConnell, Cheney, and Pence are the enemy. So, in other words, let's go kill them as well. Kill the FBI on sight. Now, I got news for you. Kevin McCarthy, Rand Paul, each and every one of them are to blame for that. And my Republican friends, you can be as incensed as you want. They are to blame. Nestor, think about this. I think we're now, as we go to air, 48 to 72 hours after that attack, the senatorial Republican senatorial candidate in Ohio, J.D. Vance, one of the most reprehensible people on the face of the earth, has not yet issued a statement condemning this man and the attack on the FBI because they can't, as a party, figure out how to stand up for the rule of law and sanity without enraging this 20 to 30% of people in our society who are crazy. So therefore, Kevin McCarthy and the crowd, Rand Paul. I mean, Rand Paul openly suggested that the FBI somehow was planting the evidence. In other words, you could see the pivot, right, in real time. The minute they knew the boxes had been secured, well, then we better come up with another narrative, and that will be that the FBI planted the evidence, despite the fact that Trump's lawyer, I mean, think about this, Nestor. This is what makes us all shake our head, right? So Fox News and everyone, and Trump is screaming that it was a raid. First of all, it wasn't a raid. We think of an FBI TV show with the blue jackets and the yellow FBI, right? What wasn't that? These guys were dressed in business clothes. They walked in, and guess who met them at the door? Donald Trump's lawyer. Guess who was on TV saying they were present the entire time? Donald Trump's lawyer. Did that stop Donald Trump and his minions from saying they weren't allowed it? No, they said it anyway, knowing that the morons will buy it. And then we get this tidbit. Donald Trump, because of the security apparatus at Mar-a-Lago, watched the entire search. So he watched the FBI agents walk in and pick up the boxes and walk out. And yet he continues to say the evidence was planted. It was
it's a property of the federal government.
It is yes. And it is, but there's no doubt it appears a violation of the law. I love the new approach, Nestor, that he just issued a blanket declassification. I'm declassifying anything that I ever take. It's declassified. I mean, it's insane, but think about it. In Maryland, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Arizona, in Michigan, every one of those states has nominated crazy people. Now, we may want to poo-poo it. And
oh, I saw the Mastriano signs in Pennsylvania.
There you go.
Hey, bro.
You saw Dan Cox signs in Western Maryland, right?
Bill Cole and I did a roundabout on this when I was sharp on it, when I had just gotten back from Latrobe in the rain on Tuesday. So you may want to go check that out. Bill Cole from Cole Roofing, big shout out to him and Gordian Energy. I mean, it started with the solar panels, right? Because you see that because he sells solar panels.
Right.
And I said, the only thing, every place I stopped to go to the bathroom had a family corner store with F. Joe Biden signs, with T-shirts with nothing but guns and NRA and middle fingers for Joe Biden. And it should be, it's alarming. I don't know what else to say.
Well,
it's
Nestor,
really, really alarming. And it's everywhere I went. It's everywhere I went, well, west of Frederick. But, you know, I did see some Brooke Learman signs. And I definitely saw Westmore signs. And I definitely saw an element of that. And again, in these areas, there's 58 Dan Cox signs. And we love Trump. And there's an American flag and a cross and they love Jesus and it's all out on the front, but there's only three people that live there. So there's 500 signs and they get three votes, right?
Don't poo-poo that though. Think about that for a minute. Dan Cox beat Kelly Schultz, who's not a moderate. I mean, Kelly Schultz is a right of center. She wanted folks to think she was a moderate, but she's not a moderate. I mean, she's someone who put in some of the most strict anti-women's reproductive health legislation ever introduced in the Maryland legislature. But Dan Cox beat her by double digits, by almost 20 points. I mean,
Well, that just tells you where the base in this state on the right side is.
And that's and that's Maryland. And that's why people get mad at me. And we'll stop in a second because I do want to just touch on the Orioles and the Ravens. It wouldn't be fair if we didn't do that. But that's why people get mad at me, Nestor, when I say the only choice short term is you have to make a decision to vote against every Republican. I mean, Liz Cheney is going to lose this week. One of the most conservative women ever in the United States Congress is going to lose probably by close to 30 to 40 points because she wouldn't kneel at the altar of Donald Trump. The Cheney name, the Bush name, one of the most conservative voting records in the United States Congress is going to be punished.
There's nothing about any of this that's Reagan-esque, I would say that.
Oh, my God. And it is what I don't discount.
Well, this is where Larry Hogan's angling, right? This is where Larry Hogan thinks.
Yeah, there's no lane for him.
He thinks he sees daylight in a place. His daylight's about the same as Martin O'Malley's was in Iowa, probably, right?
Yeah, literally. Yeah, there's no lane for Larry Hogan. The reality is, and they've dug this hole. And here's the decision that I said it earlier. They can't figure out in a democracy, which I think speaks to why they're so intent on moving away from a democracy to a system where local legislators decide who wins and loses. I mean, terrifying. And that's on the ballot in a number of states. I mean, you watch these. Quite frankly, Nestor, it's not hyperbole to say that the gubernatorial elections in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona, and to a degree, Georgia, a little
and
different.
Texas.
Although Texas, I consider still pretty reliably red, yes. But those four purple states, should they, by some fluke, elect those crazies, the 2024 presidential election becomes irrelevant because the will of the people won't matter. They are on record. They will simply say that Donald Trump wins regardless of the vote total. So we're going to talk a lot more about this as we move toward the fall. Let's talk real quick before we get out of here. And I know we don't have a lot of time left. This Oriole thing, you know, Nestor, I have been waiting for a month for the other shoe to drop. And as this hits the air, as we talk about
it. See, I don't think that way. I have, if you
really
listen to me or what, no, I've never said this is because I've watched baseball and I know how little engines do. The pitching's an issue. And now they brought the kid up and maybe the kid goes 5-1 here. The next, you know, gives him several nice starts in a row. And it wouldn't shock me. He's of the pedigree to do that. Right. So they're in a play. That maybe speaks to me being an optimist by nature in that way because
I certainly am an optimist.
I don't think they can win the World Series. As comprised right now, I don't think they can sustain that through October. But
you think they can play? You think they will be playing meaningful baseball games on September the 15th?
I don't know how they couldn't at this point.
Okay. See, I keep thinking that. And a lot of really.
I said that since the All-Star game, because there's six teams and nobody's going to run away.
Right.
Nobody's good enough to run away, right?
Well, they're in the middle, and as this hits the air, there'll be a little larger sample size. They're in the middle of six games right now that are really, really important with Tampa and Toronto. And I thought going into that, I told my grandsons, as you know, who are fanatical Oriole fans, I thought that if the Orioles were 3-3, in those six games, then that said to me, they will be in the hunt. And as we go to air, they've won the first game in rather remarkable fashion. I don't think I've ever seen.
I expect them to split. I mean, I think they'll do better than that. No, I mean, they've got whatever that factor would be that's going to make them scrappy enough to not go 2-8 in the next 10 days.
Agree. They've got a little magic sauce, and I don't think. I mean, it's been certainly since Manny. I don't remember a kid that's made more of a difference in a lineup than Adley. I mean, you and I, Nestor, have watched a lot of baseball. We watch it much closer than a lot of casual fans. I mean, we really watch it and study it. I don't think it's an exaggeration. I was trying to think, and you're good as a historian. Who in your life, maybe Ken Singleton as an Oriole, who in Oriole history has had a batting eye like Adley Rutschman? I've never seen a kid only hit really hitters' pitches and lay off the pitch an inch outside.
Palmeiro and Alomar were technicians, in that way. I mean, just from and I used to stand behind the batting cage with those guys back in the day to get there early and watch BP and watch Palmeiro, who's another guy like that ethically not worth a bag of donuts to me.
Right.
But from a baseball technician, I watched Tony Gwynn do it out in San Diego. It was like going to church, right? So, watching right.
He would be a great example, right?
Well, guys that were just great hitters or had a great eye. I'm trying to think of other selective players at the plate or guys that drew walks. I mean, anybody.
Yeah, Singleton. Singleton certainly was classic at that. Now, here's the thing that's interesting to me, and people can go back. I actually feel pretty good about this. They can go back and look at my Facebook feed a couple of weeks ago. The first day, a couple of weeks ago, that Hyde put Rutschman in the two slot, I put on Facebook that my gut says this may end up being a very significant move. I think he is an perfect number two. The guy sees five or six pitches every at bat. And now they've added this kid Vavra, way small sample size, but the same kind of discipline. We pick him up along with Nevin, right? In the, I guess it was the Givens trade. I mean, Elias has done a hell of a job. I guess what I worried about, Nestor, I keep pinching myself. Are starters going to continue to be able to keep us in the game for five innings? They have. And as you know, again, as a student of the game, nothing more mercurial than bullpens, right? You don't know from year to year. You could have a great bullpen last year, bring everybody back, and suddenly they have seven ERAs.
Well, the issue is also how much you're going to use it, right? And how early into games you're getting 5-6 days a week. If you're only getting 4 or 5 out of your starters, you're going to need more of it. And they dealt away out of their clothes. The only guy on the All-Star team 5-6 weeks ago, right? 5 weeks ago. And they diminished their bullpen.
And they trade him for a pitcher who in his first two starts has yet to give up a run. So it appears to me, a number of us were sitting around the other day and said, man, wouldn't it have been fun had Elias been the guy sitting here trying to manage the Britain and the Manny departures, I think we'd have been better a little quicker. Hey, real quick.
Well, if you would have been better quicker, you wouldn't have Rutschman. I saw this picture of Ben McDonald with Rutschman, yeah. right, and with the kid Holiday,
right.
And it's the 1-1 club, and I'm like, the notion that you'd want a club of 1-1,
right.
That means you suck a little more often than you want to suck.
Yeah, that was a lot.
It's not praise to say we have multiple members of the 1-1 club. It speaks to how much pain that the franchise has created for the fan base.
Right. The remarkable pick obviously appears to be, and we won't know until he gets here. As you know, I'm a big believer that prospects are just that until they get here. I'm convinced now Rutschman's going to be a great Oriole for as long as they can keep him until they pay him, and then he goes to New York. I think the pick of Gunnar Henderson.
There you go again. See, there you go again, right? That tells me you have no confidence in ownership, no confidence in the sport, no confidence in the integrity of the sport. That's terrible.
Oh, no.
A guy like you feels that way.
No. I just am not sure. I think the Tampa Bay model is probably the model. I'm not sure that who else other than
that's become the model because of poor ownership.
Poor ownership
is what's made this a small market, 12,000 a game. They've turned themselves into Tampa when they were the Red Sox. The Cardinals. They were the Cubs. They've become Tampa. Now, whether a new owner would change that.
I'm not sure that anybody, and again, I'm not being critical. I wish they had a salary cap and it was different. When I saw, for example, that the Padres picked up Soto and added him to Tatis at the time, who now, because he's a dummy and took some stuff, isn't going to be able to play in Machado. I thought there aren't many franchises that have those kinds of resources to spend millions and millions. You know, I hope it, listen, if it were me and if Mike Elias were taking advice from me, I'd go what was sort of what the old Oakland model, which was I probably would. I can't remember if Adley's represented by Boris. I think he might be. But I would try to cut a deal with Adley right now, extend him, overpay him in the early part so that we at least had that eight to nine years. Because I think the kid's a generational talent. The point I was making was 30 picks later, they picked Gunnar Henderson. I think I read the other day, Nestor, that the first time in history since Baseball America has been doing its rankings, an organization has the number one prospect 2 years in a row. And if Henderson is even a whisker of what Rutschman is, my goodness, that's it's a pretty strong foundation. Hey, what'd you think? Real quick, Zach Wilson, as we go, blows out his ACL. His season's over. He was going to play one or two series. I know you hate fake football. Nothing made me happier the other night than 32 guys not suiting up. How long before nobody plays in these games? How many more Zach Wilsons, J.K. Dobbins, before every coach says, I'm just not doing this?
Well, where I mean, are we? The Rams already a franchise is doing that, right? The value of the players, and we're talking about everybody wants to give Lamar $250 million. Listen, I was up in Latrobe on Tuesday, and they moved their practice on Saturday or Sunday to downtown from the farm because the farm got wet. Then the farm's wet. You feel like you have to practice there. And they went out and they were going to have thunderstorms. So they had to move practice to the morning. I mean, I saw the slippery conditions. I saw that if Mitch Trubisky goes down up there or if, you know, name any of the star players, you know, slip, blow this, pull that, whatever it is. When you don't get your horse to the course on September 11th, as John found out last year, as every organization has found out at various points, going back to Michael Vick getting annihilated by a Dallas Thomas down in Atlanta that night, nobody wants that. And it's such a rough and tumble game.
So what's the answer, Nestor? You think of this stuff. You talk to insiders. What is the answer? What's the way to get to September football with your roster intact?
Well, the way they're doing it is sacrificing guys that are going to be on a beer truck, right? Like literally,
that's right? What I think.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that they have to put something out there with helmets on and jerseys at this point and, you know, a heartbeat breathing and a pulse. So yeah, that's been, listen, John Stedman, I bought his book. I'll bring the whole thing full circle. I went to Buddy Lou's up in Hancock.
Yeah, I saw you picked up Stedman's book.
Well, so it was there last August. I said, if it's still there, I remembered it being $20. It was 10. Got it half price. Hey, John. So I picked up the book and I had a beautiful conversation with the people working there. I had a delicious crab cake. Great, great place. Buddy Lou's Antiques. It's a must stop in Hancock, Maryland. Pull off the road, get a sandwich. You will thank me. So somebody gave me the tip last year. I took him up on it. So, you know, I get this Stedman book. Man, Stedman, from the time I met him, 1984, whatever, Colts were leaving town then, he always railed about what a disgrace these preseason games were and charging full price. And then they became baked into the poor suckers' licenses and like all of that. Through the history of all that, now they're taking the games away. The coaches don't want to play. The owners don't want their quarterbacks getting hurt. That, you know, that valuable property, as Roger Dorn once said in Major League. So I would think at a point where they get 18 regular season games, no preseason games or two, or, it's going that direction. It's going to happen that way, that they can make more money by not having them. You know what I mean? You're asking me. You know, the Ravens are selling sweets and this and that and preseason. They sell commercials. I was sitting in full tilt watching TV commercials and saying, who's watching this in the third? There's nobody at the game. The vibe's bad. It's a bad optic. It's been bad for 50 years. It's like the Pro Bowl. What do you do with it when it stinks and you're trying to wrap it up and turn it into? I mean, they turn the draft into something. They've turned the combine. They can turn things into something, but fake competitions that look like strike games. I mean, that's pretty much what these are. They're almost like replacement games. They're sloppy by their very nature. At some point, they'll do away with them when they can make more money by not having. And I don't know when that's going to be.
Man, I hear you. And the last thing is, I agree with some of the analysis so far. And again, you and I will come back somewhere in the middle to the end of the season to evaluate this. Luke will evaluate it. Right now, it looks like your boy, Eric DaCosta, I know he's one of your favorites. It looks like this may be an Aussie type of draft. I mean, we've seen some, assuming Lindebaum isn't on crutches for the season, but this kid likely, boy, it looked like they struck lightning in a bottle with that kid, right? And the tackle, I said the other night, Nestor, you mentioned who watches. Well, at the beginning of the game, there was this guy that was about a foot taller than even the other lineman. I said, who the hell is that? And it was that kid, Filali, who did not look overmatched. So it looks like Eric and his team had a hell of a draft. We'll know in 6 months, but let's hope we still have a democracy when we come back next week, Nestor. It's been a crazy. Hey, who are the businesses that have stepped up to sponsor this Crab Cake Tour? I mean, it's such a great thing.
Well, Maryland Lottery's been with us. Goodwill, of course. I had Lisa Rosiniak on. Let's get your buddy John Hoey on with Lisa talking about the why. John, by the way, you, me, him, Crab Cake Towson. So we'll talk
Sounds
about that
good.
Off the air. Also, our friends at Window Nation got brand new windows in our place. Looks phenomenal. I'm sending everybody out, 866-90-NATION. They have a special financing thing going on this month that I'll be telling you about. And also the Restaurant Association of Maryland. This is your favorite. The 16th to the 25th of September.
Oh, I love it.
It is Restaurant Week all over the state. Marjorie's working with us around here all over the county. But we're getting out. We're going to be in Carroll County next week in Eldersburg. This week, Salisbury with Mayor Jake Day on Tuesday at Mako on Friday. We got Ben Cardin. We have Heather Mazier and others. Following week, we are in Eldersburg at Liberatore's on Wednesday, and then at Rock Salt Grill in Westminster. I believe that's the 25th or 26th, whatever the Friday is.
Amazing.
And then we have Wes Moore, the next governor of Maryland, going to be joining us for breakfast, and Costas, which is also a place you know in Dundalk. So, yeah, man, onward and upward. We got great guests. We got good stuff going on. I miss you. Reconning. I didn't even say this is the recon. We've been up and down the river and back and forth from travel and food and beer and crab cakes and democracy and politics and the Ravens and the Orioles. And Alaska, did we leave anything out?
I think the recon is back. Check out our buddy, Damian O'Doherty, founding partner of KO Public Affairs. I know he's going to be running around down there at Mako. So have a great trip, and we'll recon next week.
I got to get Damian on the program at Mako. That's a good idea. All right, from Ocean City to Oakland, Maryland, I have been in both this week. From Cumberland to Cambridge, I have been in both this week. And had a beer and a crab cake and bought the T-shirt. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, on behalf of my partner in crime, and Baltimore Positive partner, Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive. You can follow him out on Twitter as well as on the front porch and find him out at BaltimorePositive.com.